Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
Welcome back. Today, I'm joined by Tyler Grubb to discuss the growing world of robo-advisors. In this episode, we discuss what they are, who they serve, and when they make sense. I know you'll enjoy our conversation and hope it serves you along your journey. Tyler, thanks for coming by today to talk about robo-advisors. If you would, why do you think that we picked you to talk about this one?
Well, let's be honest. Nobody else is available at the moment. This is a topic I remember we wrote down when we started the podcast, something we wanted to talk about. I think it's on investors' minds. Our clients ask us about it. Prospects ask us about it. And we at times are confronted with the question of, why should I not just take my money and go to a Betterment or a WealthGuard, for instance?
So you combined Vanguard and Wealthfront into one mega merger with Vanfront there. Well done. So before we get into specific examples, what is a robo-advisor?
Great question. A robo-advisor at its heart is a investing platform that uses AI-driven algorithms, if you will, to create a client profile. So when you go in and you want to sign up, it's going to ask you questions and it's going to base all of its recommendations going forward based on what you answer to those questions. No different than when we sit down with a client, we kind of have what I call our discovery meeting. And we're finding out every little bit of information we can about them so that we can put the right plan together for them. The robos do the same thing. That's kind of what they are. Let's look at some of the bigger ones.
Yeah,
the who's, right? Just for simplicity's sake, we're going to discuss or keep our conversation centered around what I consider the top four robo-advisors. You can just go out there and do a search on best robo-advisors. You're going to get a multitude of lists, but these three or four are usually going to be near the top. Vanguard, which is kind of like a duh, Betterment, Wealthfront, and SoFi. I would think majority of our listeners, majority of our circles of influence, people that we interact with have heard of one or two of those four, right?
Yep.
That's kind of the who. All of them, again, kind of use different technology to come up with your client profile. Majority of them do not have an account minimum, which is one of the pros we can discuss later. I believe Wealthfront does have a $500 minimum. There's actually some promotions going on right now. And when I was doing some research for this conversation, which again, they're just trying to get people in the door to invest. I did think SoFi was interesting.
You mentioned get people in the door to invest. Who do you think is a good fit for utilizing a robo-advisor?
I think there's two categories here. I think there's people that are young, new, just starting out in the investing world. And it makes sense for them because they're getting access to an investing platform at ideally a very low cost, very low fees. And we can dive into a little bit more of what we want people to look for when they're looking at these platforms. But a majority of them do not charge a management fee. If they do charge a management fee, it's fairly low. I mean, we're talking under 25 or 20
basis
points.
Why do you think that management fee is low?
Well, that just goes back to the technology. Paying an AI person is a lot cheaper than paying a real person, right?
Yeah. So you're just saying that the scale they've reached, and it's a fairly impersonal service, so they're able to charge a lower fee and make it up on volume?
And I would go a step further and say it's extremely impersonal. And I don't mean that in a bad way. But if you're looking for something that you don't have to talk to a human being and you're okay with that, and you're just starting out, then it makes a ton of sense.
And sorry if I asked already, but how do you feel about robo-advisors personally? Do you like them, dislike them, see them as a competitor? Just where do you fall? Where do you fall?
To answer the first part, I like them a lot. I see their benefit just in the investing world. I see the place they serve. I don't view them as a competitor, so to speak. I mean, there's going to be, in our 3 years of Full Sail, I think we've had one or two conversations where clients were deciding between us and a robo, possibly. Majority of the time, it's between us and another larger independent bank, trust company, RIA, you name it. But we have these conversations. So sure, are they technically a competitor? Yeah, I don't view them as a competing entity at all. I think they serve a really good place as an option for us to refer clients that may not be a good fit for us yet.
And what would make them not a good fit for us, but a good fit for a robo-advisor?
Great question. A couple reasons. One, there's not enough assets out there for us to manage.
You're just saying that at this point in their wealth journey, their financial world isn't really complicated enough that we're going to be able to add enough value, and they just need some investment management. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Spot on. I break the wealth management path into kind of three categories. The first category is the accumulation phase. That's going to capture anybody that's, let's say, just out of school, maybe in college, but just out of school now, single, getting married, starting a family, if that's the path they want to go down. Or let's say just out of school, starting a job, starting to finally make some money. And then we start in that same accumulation phase, we start merging into now we're making good money and now we've got some extra money that we can choose to do something with. Hopefully they're saving it and investing it, which is where we're going here. The next phase I talk about a lot is the preservation phase. And then the third one's enjoyment. So I think this fits really well with the accumulation phase for a couple reasons, but normally these are younger investors. They're okay with the technology. They understand the technology. That's key. You've got to be able to understand how to navigate these platforms in order to make it work for you.
Do you feel like the platforms are fairly user-friendly and intuitive?
I think so. And if you do some research, which I highly recommend you do, just no different than if you have $1 million and you're walking into our office and you're interviewing a handful of firms, get on and look at the differences between the robo-advisors that are out there and see which one might make sense as far as, does this one charge a management fee? Does this one charge any commissions? If you see the word commissions, run. I will tell you that. But they're technology companies. They just do investing. So they're going to have a great platform. They're going to have a good app. You're going to be able to get on there and do it. They're going to make it as probably as easy as possible.
How personalized and tailored are their services?
I would say it's more tailored than it's personalized, if that makes sense.
Differentiate those.
It's tailored in the sense that when you get in and you create a profile using their AI and the algorithms that they have in place, you're going to answer a bunch of questions about yourself, your stage of life, your income, your debt, goals. And then it's going to put together some sort of recommendation. So it is personalized in a sense of, yeah, they're going to have some general information about you and they're going to put together, I'm not going to call it a plan, but they're going to put together a recommendation. It is not personalized in the sense that you're not really ever going to interact with a person face-to-face. And if you are interacting with a person face-to-face, it probably means that something's gone wrong because you're calling, having to call in and try to talk to somebody. And we all know how that goes.
One anecdote I have was whenever we actually transferred an account over, I don't remember which one, so I don't want to be wrong, but they required a hard copy wet signature on a document. We couldn't actually do a digital transfer, which I thought was just really funny that the technology company required a wet signature.
That's so funny.
Yeah. They wouldn't accept a digital signature.
They just can't get away from it. Just like we deal day to day with Fidelity, which is our custodian here. They want to move everything to cloud-based electronic signature, but that's great until it's not. And we have to have a signature. We have to get somebody that wants to come in and sign. Anyway, side note, but we've discussed the who as far as the kind of the top four that are out there.
When do they make sense? You'd kind of said a little bit about the accumulation phase. Why do you think they are particularly useful during that stage of the wealth journey?
In my opinion, in that phase, you've got a lot of investors who start having excess cash on hand, whether it's from, you know, some people in that phase will inherit some money. Maybe a grandparent has passed away and they inherit some money. They're at a job. They start making a good living. They're at that second career stop that, you know, kind of increased their net income. So you've got some people that are beginning to look at this. They're starting to take their future seriously. And they're looking down the road and thinking, man, I'm not 18 anymore. I'm, you know, whatever the age is. And they start thinking about that future, whatever that looks like for them. So it makes a ton of sense because maybe on Wealthfront, I don't believe there's any account minimums on a lot of these platforms. I think Wealthfront might have a $500 minimum, but we'll just say 500 bucks. Let's say you have 500 bucks laying around in the savings account on top of whatever you want to keep in there. And so you decide, okay, well, I'll go open up a Wealthfront account and put $500 to work. It does make a ton of sense when you've got somebody starting out that's new. The other category, I think it makes sense for anybody, whether it's accumulation phase, preservation phase, or the enjoyment phase, is they like the simplicity of it. And they're okay with the technology. They're okay with the lack of face-to-face interaction or one-on-one conversations. There's absolutely a group of individuals or investors out there that appeals to, and that's fine.
If you would talk about where trust plays a factor there, because I know that there are some people who definitely enjoy that face-to-face and increases the level of trust. And you mentioned that there's also the benefit, if you will, is the lack of a face-to-face interaction on the robo-advisor platform. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. I think trust is huge. And I would say that in our office, that's a huge deal. All of our relationships are founded on and remain focused on trust. If our clients trust us, then we're doing a good job, regardless of what the market's doing. Now, in the robo-advising world, trust looks a little different, in my opinion. You've got to trust that the technology they have in place and the safety protocols they have in place are going to, you know, keep you and your wealth protected. The same questions clients ask us, I hope they're researching and analyzing these robo-advisors on. Who's the custodian of my money? Where's my money held?
What would you say are some of the pros? You've mentioned several, but yeah, just kind of give me a little pros and cons list for robo-advisors as a whole industry, not necessarily specific to individual providers.
Great question. The benefits, the pros, if you will, it appeals to a generation that I don't think our industry was appealing to 10 years ago. And by that, I mean really the younger beginner investor. And it's great for them because it gets them involved. It makes them start thinking about it. It makes them ask questions. I mean, we were talking about the algorithm and profile it creates. Those are questions that they're asking 22, 23, 24-year-olds. And for my example, questions that I wasn't getting asked. I think the only thing I got asked at that point was, do you want to participate in your 401k plan? And I was like, what is that? Or, okay, sure. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that sounds great. So it's educating more people, which I really like. I think the education side of it's huge because what's happening is investors that are using these platforms will become clients of a firm like Full Sail down the road.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And so that's why I really, going back to the competitor conversation, I don't view them as so much of as a competitor, but as someone that I do believe investors will and can outgrow. Their needs are going to become greater than what these robo-advisors can provide, if you will.
What kinds of needs do they expand and grow into that you think the robo-advisors cannot meet then?
I think, for lack of a better term, this the family office style that many bigger firms offer. This is great for investing. But think about everything else that we do around here. If clients of ours are listening to this, think about everything else that you call in and you ask a random question about. Those are the services, which, by the way, we answer more questions about non-invested assets than I do anyway, than what their assets that we're currently managing. So you got questions about lending, buying a house, buying a second house, generational wealth transfer.
Financial planning.
Yeah. And that actually perfectly leads me to one of the big cons, in my opinion, of robo-advisors. They are not financial planners. Do not confuse them with a financial planner.
Differentiate investment management and financial planning then, please.
Let's define investment management as assigning yourself a risk tolerance, giving yourself an allocation, and putting money into the market. S&P 500's up 5% in a year. You're up 4% based on how you're allocated. So it is managing your investments for you.
If I'm hearing you correctly, that 1% trail could be correct and is a good thing if you are invested correctly based off your risk and asset.
Right. I'm saying you're not taking on the full market risk. You've got we'll call it an 80-20 portfolio. So you only have 80% of the market of the S&P 500, let's say.
Gotcha.
If that's, I mean, you're the investment analyst. You can break that down way better than I can. But yeah, that 1% difference, I'm just assuming that there's some fixed income in there.
Okay, gotcha. So that's the investment management side. Where's the financial planning side?
So the financial planning side is where we sit down, or a client sits down with their advisor, and you're having at the least an annual conversation around your financial picture. Now, you can go in every single day if you want to these robo-advisors and adjust your client profile and your goals. But that's on you to do. You're making those decisions. You're changing the goals. The difference is when we sit down and we're doing financial planning, that's us having a conversation that's going to change. We know it's going to change. The best thing that I think that we do as advisors and we help investors take the emotion out of investing, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
We sit down, we're kind of a first line of defense when they're, for lack of better words, freaking out. Market's tanking.
Can I pause you there?
Yeah.
The counter argument would be, how could I get any less emotional than utilizing a technology-driven AI platform that automates my investing like a robo-advisor? So that's what the math major in me would say is, that doesn't seem to make sense to me.
No, that's a great question. And that's a great comment because, yeah, you're the one going in and creating your risk profile. The difference is, though, nobody's stopping you from going in and making a change when the market's tanking or when the market's up. You're getting nervous. You take gains off the table. Now, I know for a fact that these platforms will have recommendations based on algorithms and their technology they have in place. They might tell you, hey, you're up X amount or you're down this. And so here's our recommendation. And maybe or you're doing some rebalancing. It is your account. You can log into your Vanguard account at any point and sell. Or buy this or buy that. So again, that's one of the other cons in there is the emotional part of it. And it's emotional from you're feeling something because the market's going down. So you're going in and taking action instead of you're feeling something because the market's going down. And then, oh, by the way, you call and you talk to Max in the office and he goes over the fact that we put this plan together. And this one day is just a day in our 30-year plan that we have. So yes, it's emotions are involved. How they're handled and confronted is the big difference, I think.
That makes sense. What are some of the other cons that you see?
Not necessarily a con. I think we've kind of discussed that. But one of the big differences is I don't want people to confuse these robo-advisors with a target date fund. And I know we've talked about those in the past, but a target date fund is something that's wildly popular in 401k plans, retirement plans, where it takes a assumed retirement date and it allocates your portfolio based on that date. So the closer we get to that date, let's call it 2055 is when you're planning to retire. A target date fund is going to get more and more conservative the closer we get to that date. This does not do that for you. If you assign yourself a client profile and you want to be aggressive, again, this is my understanding. Now you would want to watch this, but you would have to go in and adjust that as you got closer to retirement. So again, that's where I think people will graduate from robo-advisors to a bigger wealth management firm is when they get to that point where they don't want to have the time or really the expertise to sit there and make those decisions. So that was just one differentiator that I wanted to make sure we highlight. The other thing, and this, I guess this could be a pro, but the other thing I wanted to leave everybody with is it does create discipline. And I do like that. It creates discipline in the fact that it's going to encourage you to set up a automatic investment process. So maybe it's $50 out of your paycheck or out of your bank account every month. It's going to create that discipline. And I do like that. But my goal, and I'd love your feedback here, is just to really educate our listeners on what it is, who it's for, when it can make sense. But then I think there does come a point when a majority of people would or could find the benefit of working with, in our case, a larger wealth management firm.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add from what you said. I think one of the things that a lot of the good robo-advisors, I'm philosophically aligned with their investment process.
Okay.
They try to keep costs low. They, for the most part, do index-based investing. So I am, with a good robo-advisor, I am investment aligned philosophically with what they are trying to help with how they are investing client.
What else? Did we make sense of this?
I think so. Anything you want to add there, Tyler?
No. I think, again, it's not that I wanted to get on here and I think say that they are all bad. And I don't think we did that. I also don't want to get on here and tell people that it's just a breeze and it's guaranteed and automatic. That's not the case at all. But the technology is great. The introduction to investing is fantastic. The discipline it can create. And I hope we get more and more clients that here in 10 years have been at one of these platforms, have done this themselves, and have built themselves a nice, starting point where then we can come in and we can take them to that next level that family office style service. That would be awesome. So Dexter, I appreciate it. This is a fun conversation, and we can always revisit this at some point down the road.
Thanks for coming by. Until next time, fair winds and following seas.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.